Good morning, everyone. Hello, everyone. Maybe it's not morning for you wherever you are. We are Lizzie and Justin, and this is Turning Towards Life. And you're very, very welcome here. Thank you for joining us. Maybe you're joining us live on Facebook. Maybe you're joining us through Spotify or some other podcast thing. And maybe you're watching a video on our wonderful website, turningtowards.life. However you're listening or watching, you're very, very welcome. And each week, we get the luxury of gathering here, Justin and I, and with you too. And increasingly, we're finding out more and finding out more ways to know who's with us and who's watching and listening and who this means something to. And so every time you tell us something about your experience, it's fuel to the fire, I think, of keeping on doing this. And of course, even if you weren't here, I think we'd probably do it anyway. But it does mean a lot that there are other people, doesn't it, Justin, in the mix with us. So thank you. And the last couple of times we've gathered, Justin's mentioned our amazing Buy Me a Coffee thing, which is a little micro site place to go, a little link that you can click on. And it allows you to support us and to help keep this something that is freely available in the world. And the sweet thing about it is that you can leave a little note for us to say when you buy us a coffee what this is like for you. And that's so sweet to read those messages. So you can go to buymeacoffee.com/turningtowardslife. Got the link right. And we'd love to hear from you that way. Or you can email us. You don't have to buy us a coffee, of course. You can email us and just tell us. We get these lovely emails that we share between us. You can email hello@turningtowards.life and tell us what this means to you and tell us anything you like, really. We just like receiving your emails and hearing from those of you who aren't bodily known to us but are part of our Turning Towards Life family. So please do reach out to us. We love to hear from you. And this week we have a source chosen by Justin. We alternate the choice of source. So each week it's either me or Justin choosing what we're going to read to one another and then see what kind of reflection comes. And this week it's a Justin choice, which is very lovely. Justin's choices obviously are always wonderful and mostly Justin, ones I've never seen before, I realise. You have a different set of tentacles to me, and how wonderful. So, thank you for choosing this wonderful source by Howard Zinn. And good morning to you as well, Justin.
Oh, thanks, Lizzie. Good morning to you and hello to everyone. We'll get to the source in a moment. I'll just say to everyone, you can always find the sources. Turningtowards.life is the place to find the sources, and in the podcast notes, if you're on a podcast, and in our Facebook group, all of those places. There is a magnificent library now, searchable library on turningtowards.life of what, 319, I think, as of today, maybe, sources, and all the conversations that go with them. So that's fun to have. Before we get into the source, I just want to add my thanks to everyone. Thank you. And also say, you might know that this whole conversation got born out of a collective called Third Space. And if you're interested in what Third Space is up to, you can head over, also hop over to wearethirdspace.com. But also, we're recording this in mid-November 2023. Lizzie, I noticed that I'm already in my mind saying 2024, and I'm having to catch myself with it being the right year. There's something in me that leaps ahead. But anyway, in 11th and 12th of January 2024, I, together with our very dear and wonderful friend and colleague Nina from Third Space, are leading our 2-day online Foundations of Coaching program. And it's a great way to get to meet you, and to, if you want to step very deeply into the body of work that gave rise to all of this, you'd be very welcome to join us. And you can find out at wearethirdspace.org. And now I feel like we've made enough announcements and it's time. So, Lizzie, before I read the source, you and I have been talking about how we've been noticing that in these weeks, where there's a lot of tumult in the world, that many of us are being exposed to, you can't help but feel it and see it if you happen to open the news or talk to people or whatever, that we've been being drawn to a particular kind of source. We found there are some things that are maybe in other weeks have been more drawn us, but over these few weeks we've been drawn again and again in parallel related directions, and this one seemed to me to be another one of this family of conversations that we've been in recent weeks, and it's called To Be Hopeful in Bad Times. To be hopeful in bad times is based on the fact that human history is not only of cruelty, but also of compassion, sacrifice, courage, kindness. If we only see the worst, it destroys our capacity to do something. If we remember those times and places where people have behaved magnificently, this gives us the energy to act. And if we do act in however small way, we don't have to wait for some grand utopian future. The future is an infinite succession of presents. And to live now, as we think human beings should live, in defiance of all that is bad around us, is itself a marvelous victory.
Thank you, Justin. To be hopeful in bad times. To be hopeful in bad times is based on the fact that human history is not only of cruelty, but also of compassion, sacrifice, courage, and kindness. If we only see the worst, it destroys our capacity to do something. If we remember those times and places where people have behaved magnificently, this gives us the energy to act. And if we do act in however small way, we don't have to wait for some grand utopian future. The future is an infinite succession of presents. And to live now as we think human beings should live, in defiance of all that is bad around us, is itself a marvelous victory.
I've been busy thinking a lot about how, when we're presented with calamity in the world, whether it's close into us or far away, whether it involves people we know intimately or people we just imagine, or when it's about the slower, grander and frightening trends in the world that we can have our attention drawn to, how what I've been paying attention to in myself a lot is what aspects of me does that awaken, what gets brought forward. And I've been thinking a lot about the kind of choices that we have when we're afraid, when we are disgusted by something, when we are frightened by something, when we confront something that is incredibly difficult in us, when we are pained by something, when we're grieving for something. That if we think of ourselves just as one thing, just as a single, simple something, it's really, really easy to get convinced by the responses in us that would really narrow us, that would have us shut ourselves down or hide ourselves away, or rage in ways that are destructive, as opposed to having rage that's, you know, anger that's constructive. And the language of that we've been talking about a lot here on Turning Towards Life, of having different parts of ourselves and something more essential, a more essential self of us, has been proving very helpful to me, because along with Howard Zinn, it seems to me that although human history contains enormous amounts of cruelty, it would be so easy to imagine that that is just simply what people are, which is not what I think what people are. I think that that's what we are when the terrified parts of us, or the parts of us that don't know our own true size and so then want to dominate, come forward. Or the frozen parts of us, or the more traumatized parts of us, when all of those parts of us come forward, it is easy, and there is no shortage of evidence right now in the world today and all the way through history of how cruel we can be to one another. But I don't think it's what we are. What I know is what we are. When we quieten ourselves down enough, when we find our way home inside ourselves, we are, and I don't know if this is a mistyping in this version of Howard Zinn's, he says the future is an infinite succession of presents. He may have written presents, like present moments, but in this version it's written presence, presence. That the kind of presence that we are, the kind of way we live now, when we quieten ourselves enough and we find out the deeper something inside us that has an answer to how humans should live, it's very simple. I don't think there we find our wish to hurt one another and denigrate one another, and we find our wish to the joy of loving and being loved, and the joy of standing for integrity and courage and all of those kind of things. So I'm feeling rekindled at this time. I've been noticing in this time, when in recent weeks I've been feeling, as many of us have, in different reasons and different directions, very hurt and very afraid and very all kinds of things, that it is actually an enormous relief to come back to what Howard Zinn says, which is we have a choice about what in ourselves we allow to lead. And then we also, he doesn't say this, but I think it's implied, we also have a choice about what we do with and towards the parts of us that would act in a cruel way, or would lash out, or would shut us down. We have choices about how we relate to those ones inside us too. And if we give ourselves half a chance, the choices aren't difficult to see. I think that what we long for always leads us towards compassion, sacrifice, as in giving up that which we are most clinging onto so that we can bring forward our courage and our kindness. I think that's who we are. And so we need people like Howard Zinn to say, hold on, you don't have to doom scroll the news. You don't have to judge the world as ruined. You don't have to, because you're suffering, treat the people around you and increase their suffering. There is another way always available to us, and it's very, very close by. If only we would allow ourselves to soften past the panic and the rage and the clenching and the fear and the all of those parts that desperately want to be in the driver's seat. So I'm glad for this gentle and simple reminder.
Very, what's the word, settling to hear you talk of it. I can feel the relief in me. And I've also been watching myself with, like, looking at the dynamics inside of me when I sit and watch the news, or when I ask people for their view on things, to understand things more, and the kind of tricky conversations around everything that happen, and this kind of defiance of all that is bad, in defiance of all that's bad around us, in favor of hopefulness, maybe not all the time, but to have a dedication to it feels so important. I read something the other day about, gosh, I'm going to be terrible at quoting it now, but there was somebody in the Vietnam War who was protesting outside some big important building, and someone said, you know, what are you doing here? You know, you kneeling here is not going to do anything. And he said, oh no, this isn't like for the world, this is for me, because I'm not going to let this turn me into the person that it turns me into if I don't dedicate myself to something different, which is hopefulness and my own joy. And it really moved me because I can feel as well what all of the bad times, all of the news turns me into. And I can feel my, when my fear arises, so does my defensiveness. And so this thing that you said, I can't quite remember your exact words actually, Justin, but where we can let go a little bit of the very thing we're clinging on really hard to in service of this that's in this source that you've brought. And that kind of reconnects us in some way. I also experienced like a breath-filled relief of like, oh, I don't have to be so afraid. I don't have to be so taken up by it all. I don't have to feel so guilty. I don't have to feel so like I should be dedicating myself to it rather than holding it inside of some bowl of joy that exists as part of my humanness, as my essential humanness, even. And so to be given the permission and the invitation to have part of my practice, not only being aware of what's happening in the world, but being aware of what's happening in me so that I can not be taken out, not be determined by the things I'm seeing, the things I'm watching, the conversations I'm hearing. And so possibility returns. You know, I think we've probably said the word possibility 100,000 times in our work, Justin, and how profound an opportunity is for humans to feel a sense of possibility in them. For me to feel a sense of possibility in me, I know is a huge deal. And so for me to cultivate my life in bad times towards hopefulness, and towards possibility and towards aliveness. And for me to feel that's welcome and okay, it really does give me a way of relating to the world that isn't doom and isn't, I'm just going to get in bed and have my capacity to do something entirely destroyed by repetitively watching the news and feeling like that's the only thing I can do to make it better or something, which of course it doesn't make it better at all. Me sitting watching the news just doesn't. I feel like I've learned that so many times. And I think we've even spoken about it a lot here because, of course, this isn't the only bad thing that's happened while we've been doing Turning Towards Life. I remember talking about reading the newspaper on the tube and thinking that that was my job because if I didn't read the newspaper, I wasn't truly joining with the world in all of its disastrousness, and therefore I wasn't a real person. And I know we've spoken about lots of things in the past already, and yet it's we have to find our way back all the time as the world unfolds in all of its craziness and difficulty and trauma and horror. There is a history of cruelty in humanness. That's not very well, that's recent and also not very recent, and everything in between. And so, what we stand for in these times feels really crucial to collective okayness. And hopefully, our conversation today, Justin, is both giving us permission to be ourselves, like you were saying, the goodness of us. But also, maybe gives other people some sense that they can have the freedom to invest in their joyfulness and practices of curiosity and wonder and kindness and compassion and love and living. What are the words? Living in a way that we should be living is how I was remembering it. And remember, we could be one of those people who behaves magnificently.
Really, the story that I've heard from you before about the person being asked, why are you doing this? And saying, well, it's because of who it makes me. It's very, very powerful, because it seems to me that I'm just going to use this language that we've used before, Lizzie, of having an essential self of us, which I think is really love. Actually, I think if you watch humans, if you watch us when we come into the world, if you watch us when we're at our littlest, it seems to me very obvious that what we most are is love. And then, of course, we have all these other parts of ourselves that get frightened and want to defend us and play a very important role in protecting us in various ways. But when the frightened and often traumatized protective parts of us are allowed to lead, they turn us into something different than the love and depth and wisdom and kindness and inclusiveness and sort of rich complexity that a human is. They take us away from that into something that is simplified and rigid and desperate and whatever. And I think that in times when we are, look, we're at a time right now where a particular conflict is being drawn to our attention in the news in a very visceral way, and I think it's awakening a lot of defensive parts of many, 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 many of us in lots of ways. But it's not new that there's terrible conflict in the world. It's just that certain ones get brought to our attention, and it suits the news cycle to tell us about this one. But, you know, how about this one that's been going on? The reason I'm saying it is not to make any judgment about what makes it onto the news, but to notice that there's something in the world that is fed by alarming us, and that we feed by alarming ourselves and then narrowing ourselves by having, they're called parts for good reason, because they only have part of the story. And that how we choose to live matters, how we respond to calamities matters, and how we choose to live when we're not in the midst of the calamity really matters. And one of the parts of this, so I'm really with the person kneeling in front of wherever they were kneeling, who were doing it because of the kind of person that they became. And actually, I was thinking whilst you were talking, so often in doing the kind of work that we do, particularly come across it in the very sort of busy organizational life that many people lead in these times, working really, really hard and being super busy all the time. People talk about the distinction between being and doing. And sometimes that sounds very fluffy and sort of escapist, like, well, I'll stop doing and I'll just be. And it's like sort of can have the image of, I don't know, that means a bit like sitting on the beach for the next 10 years in the middle of things. And I actually think it's a way more interesting and way more important question, which is we don't often and easily ask ourselves, what kind of person do I want to be? It's much easier to ask, what should I do now? I should, you know, when the answers come out, whatever they are. But those answers are often driven by the parts of ourselves that only have parts of the story, and also which are afraid and angry and all of that. But more importantly, I think that those parts of ourselves are often incredibly binary in their thinking. Something is right or wrong. Somebody is good or bad. There is a definite answer about what to do, and not a shred of nuance in trying to understand someone else and their experience. And that's why what Howard Zinn is talking about is so important, because the easy place to hang out is the place that fuels this, I'm in the right and you're in the wrong. I'm better than you are or worse than you are, whichever way around you want to have it. That those parts of ourselves in a weird way are kind of soothed by the certainty that things are a very, very, very particular way. And deeper down in us, at the center of us, at the core of us, is something that is really able to stay in nuance and the openness of things and the unknowability of things, and really wants to learn and understand and to reach the hearts of others, and to get that our own experience and our own judgments are never the full story. and that there are lots of ways of seeing things, and that to be alive is to hold together opposites, to hold opposites together inside us. I think that's, these are some of the things I would add to Howard Zinn's list. And we run the risk, if we don't listen to what Howard Zinn is remembering us, if we don't find our way back to ourselves, that when we are alarmed, mobile, our insides are mobilized in this way, we run the risk of making a society, making our family systems and community systems and societal relationships of, in a way, mirroring the very crises that we see elsewhere that alarm us so much. And it takes a real choice in us to notice. I think the act of noticing when we've got caught up into an escalating thing inside us, particularly if it either makes us feel very, very certain of the terribleness of everything, or if it makes us very, very certain of our rightness, we're probably caught up in the pattern of the protectors and defenders inside us, and not coming back to the how people can live when we live magnificently. And we owe it to ourselves and one another, not just because it might be a better experience to live magnificently, not just because of that, but because it really has implications for the kind of world that we're making. I think where I'm getting to is, I think it's easy to imagine that the world is made by the big dramatic events that we see on the news, but actually the world is made by how we each live in the midst of the ordinary everyday with one another. Much more of the world is made there than is made by the grand dramas. And in fact, for any of us who get caught up in the grand dramas, I think the same, you know, directly affected by them, I think the Howard Zinn's observations apply there too, which is, even in calamity, we have choices about whether we're going to bring forward our magnificence or that which is tiny in us.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose I'm saying all of this because for those of us who aren't caught up in the grand drama, it's easy to imagine that our own reactivity is sort of like marginal, but it's actually central in the world that we make.
Well, this thought is being born in me, Justin, of, as you're talking, when we ask this question, what kind of person do I want to be? And we answer that from, I don't know what the word is, equanimity and presence and a non-mobilized state. And we answer it from something real and substantial in us that's aligned with our goodness and our essential goodness. When we answer that question, what kind of person do I want to be? And we have that as a guiding light somehow, somewhere. And then the world happens to us, whether it's somebody giving us a parking ticket or a world horror-filled event and anything in between that mobilizes us. What an incredible kind of beacon to have, that I can find what the gap between that is and who I'm becoming because of what the world is being to me right now and how I'm reacting to it. And then I can see what my work is. Oh, I know this is the kind of person that I want to be. I know this is how I'm being now because of the things that have been happening. I wonder what needs to happen in order for me to find my way to more alignment with the description of the kind of person I want to be. Like, what do I have to do to bring the gap much smaller in my reactivity? The gap much smaller between my reactivity and the kind of person that I want to be. Like, I feel really instructed and supported by that little structure. Because if I can't hang my actions off of the who I want to be in the world and what kind of person I really want to be, if I can't match up my state now with that, and loads of times we can't, you know, but the commitment to knowing that there's a journey to be on, to find our way, to heal, to get help, to be in conversation with one another, to be in community about things that matter. If I can find my way to alignment again, then I can behave magnificently, not as a kind of standard or something, but as an actual expression of my intention in the world, rather than going around feeling like I'm someone other than myself, that I know to be what I really want to be. So I'm feeling really grateful for that language and the importance of articulating in the first place who I want to be, what kind of person I want to be. And, you know, you were saying how interesting that conversation is about being, and how nuanced that is too, how each of us will have a completely different answer to the other about who we want to be in the world.
We're right at the time when it's time for us to end. Lizzie, and I suppose one of the places that I'm left with from this conversation is that there's something in Howard Zinn's invitation that might also help us to be the ones who can really attend to the nuances of all the different ways that there are to be, but also when we soften ourselves in that way and are in contact with what's really true in us, I think we also become more able to listen across what we might take to be divides, to be with those who we disagree with, to be with those who have very different points of view and very different ways of being in the world, and actually hear one another. And in a way, I think that's the risk we face at the moment, is that in forgetting to return to this soft and wise and very deep and very courageous center, we lose the ability to hear one another's experience, and particularly to hear the experience of those who we've already excluded or already judged, just as we can't hear those parts of us that we've already excluded and we've already judged when we are caught up in this.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea as we end that the future could be an infinite succession of presence. And that the wonderful thing about this is that the only thing we have to do is to take the next step towards what's called for, towards living magnificently, which will give us the energy to act. That's the only thing we need to do, is to take the next step together. And I think talking and listening to one another like this is part of what helps us. I think that's why we do it, and why we're inviting, and it's so good to have other people around us. Thank you for all of you who are also in this conversation, even though you may not be, you aren't speaking to us in this moment. That I think it's the bit that Howard Zinn doesn't say, but you often remind us of, Lizzie, is that one of the things we can be for one another is the ones who help one another back to what Howard is. It's not only in ourselves, we can actually be the ones for one another who help us do this. And gosh, will we all benefit? Do we all benefit every time anyone chooses to do that? So thank you, Lizzie, for being one of those ones in the world who helps us back to ourselves, to our essential center where we can find out how to live. It's a great joy to do this together. And say thank you to everyone for being with us. And I also want to say, Lizzie, you and I don't exactly know. Usually we say we'll see you the same time next week. Actually, right now, with a little one, a baby about to arrive, on the shores of this world. We don't actually know if that will be the case. You and I will be here next week. But what we do know is that this week we secretly squirreled away a couple of conversations that we can pull out of the bag should we get interrupted for a while. And I'm so excited that we got that. So to everyone who's with us, we will be back this time next week. Whether we're back live or not, we'll be here.
We will.
So thank you, Lizzie, and thank you, everyone. And we'll end here, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, everyone.